Welcome to TwerpCast, episode 17, Fallcast 2008. Today our topic is genre television for fall 2008. I'd like to introduce you to James Caswell, creator of Star Trek Eras, Derek Geist, and co-producer of TwerpCast. No, there's no jokes this time. I'm not funny on demand. No, I mean it. There's no jokes.
And I'm going to introduce Doug Zeitlin. Unlike him, I will crack jokes at his expense. Doug is currently the district leader in Dance Dance Revolution for the greater northern area of Mystery, Alaska. So, it's been a year, Doug. And what an eventful year it's been.
Yeah, I kind of like to forget quite a bit of this year. Fortunately, a lot of the television shows that started last year won't be back to remind us. I know we mentioned it last year, but the very fact that 80% of new shows are supposed to fail, it still amazes me that that's an industry where people can get paid.
Speaking of failed shows, our top favorite pick of last year managed to bomb miserably, which was a great shame. And while Bionic Woman didn't get picked up for a second season, that won't stop us from picking a favorite again this year. We will be talking about the new rendition of Knight Rider in our next TwerpCast.
If you didn't have the opportunity to catch Bionic Woman this year, because it was on and off and kind of all over the place, I highly suggest picking up the DVD. It really is worth your while.
Among the many reasons why I'm sad the show didn't get picked up for a second season is the fact that I was really looking forward to them squeezing blood from a stone and releasing the original series of Bionic Woman's to DVD.
Jamie Summers, wherefore art thou?
While that was a large disappointment, one of the main contributors to how this season was built was actually the writer's strike that happened towards the end of 2007. Apparently the writer's strike ran long enough that it hindered them from creating new shows by the appointed deadline. So we end up with many modernizations of old shows, remakes of British shows, and imports from across the seas this year. All of which are still better than reality TV.
Well, it's not like the writer's strike was something that the networks really didn't see forthcoming. Some of the stuff that's going to be new for the fall was actually originally intended as the mid-season replacements for the writer's strike. For example, Life on Mars. The network has been trying to remake that British television show for probably two full years now. They've essentially ditched the entire original cast except for the main star.
Including the producer, if I remember correctly. Wasn't David E. Kelly attached to that? So probably the best way for us to handle this is to just dive right in. As we did last year, we're going to primarily cover the genre shows, the science fiction fantasy-based programming that's coming out this fall. We're going to pick our favorites, we're going to make some predictions, and as we said earlier, we will be dedicating a whole episode to Knight Rider, so we're going to try to keep our mention of the show to a minimum. Of the shows that are coming out, do you have two favorites that you can pick, Doug?
Two shows that I am most looking forward to this year. One is actually a mid-season replacement, and the other is a syndicated show. I'm really looking forward to Legend of the Seeker, which is an adaptation of Terry Goodkind's book series that starts with The Wizard's First Rule. But overall, what I really want to see, the one that has me salivating that I can't wait for, is Dollhouse. Josh Whedon and Eliza Dushku, you can't get a better pairing than that.
See, I'm actually slightly surprised because I thought for sure Life on Mars was going to hit that list and or Fringe.
And I can understand why you'd say that. Fringe, I have seen the pilot episode, and it was good. I enjoyed it. I'm the J.J. Abrams fan in this group.
You enjoyed it so much that you twisted my arm until I agreed to watch it.
Yes, exactly. And I think you agreed that it's not bad.
No, it was actually much better than I had anticipated, to the point where, as soon as it becomes available, I will be programming it onto my DVR to give it a couple more chances as well.
I'm sure that I will thoroughly enjoy the show, and I'll watch it every week religiously, but it's not at the top of my list.
One thing that J.J. Abrams is fairly well known for is taking a specific storyline and kind of turning it about 45 degrees and giving a new spin to it. Felicity was the teen angst college show done just a little bit differently. And I know that there's a lot of people who look at Felicity as one of his worst pieces of work, but it was on for three seasons, so it was fairly successful.
It was very successful. Let's not forget, without Felicity, there would be no Lost. There would be no Alias. There would be no Cloverfield. J.J. Abrams is, so far, very successful.
He had a success with Felicity. He had a very strong success with Alias. Lost still has a very devoted following, even with a production schedule that puts it all over the map as to when it's going to come out and how often. It went almost a complete year between new episodes, and yet most of its audience still returned to it. And from what we saw of the pilot, I don't think there's any reason to assume that Fringe won't follow it in that pattern. I will say that after seeing Fringe, it does give me hope that the new Star Trek film will be as good as I'm hoping it will be.
I'm thinking it's going to be excellent. I'm a TOS fan forever. I was out there before there was a fight between are we Trekkies or Trekkers. We're all Trek fans. And I think J.J. Abrams is just going to bring new life to it. Life on Mars, I really like the BBC version. And for those of you who haven't seen it, I suggest looking on the internet. It's only 16 episodes total. It is spectacular, and it's a mind job you can't describe. That being said, Americans don't ruin everything British, but they do a pretty good job of it. With all due respect to The Office and Steve Carell, I don't expect Life on Mars to be a very good show.
The fact that it lasted for 16 episodes in Britain, that doesn't sound like a lot to an American audience, but with the way British television works their series and seasons, that was actually a 2 or 3 year run.
And the only reason that that show didn't come back is because the main star did not renew his contract. The formula worked so well that they retooled the show and brought it back under a different name. The main character is a 2008 police officer. He has an accident, and he wakes up in 1972. In 1972, you don't know. Is he A, in a coma, dreaming this? Has he B, actually traveled in time? Or C, is he actually a 1972 cop who's just crazy? So when that actor quit, they brought in an actress to replace him. She travels back from 2008 to 1983, and it's essentially the same formula with the same group of cops, except for the new cop is the time traveler.
You mentioned bending your mind, and that actually causes the top two concerns that I have for that show. Are they either going to A, keep the mind bending in place and lose about 50% of their American audience right off the bat? And I do believe that I'm being extremely generous with the numbers of 50%. Or B, are they going to dumb it down enough for that 50% to the point where those who are seeing it because they've actually heard of the show are going to be insulted and not want to watch it? And I think both of those are very legitimate concerns.
I think that's just it. I like to say, no, there's a third choice. It's going to be really good, and everybody that watches it's going to like it. I'm pretty set in my mind that it really isn't either or. Either it's going to lose the audience because it's too smart for them, or it's going to lose the audience because it's too dumb for them. And there's no middle ground there.
There is no happy medium. I, too, am really looking forward to Dollhouse. There hasn't been a single thing that Joss Whedon has produced that I haven't enjoyed yet, and I don't expect Dollhouse to ruin that streak at all. Of the stuff that's coming out in September and October, though, one of the things that I'm looking forward to is My Own Worst Enemy, which is Christian Slater coming to television. He plays your typical white-collar businessman with a wife and kid who also happens to have a multiple personality who is a secret agent. And he discovers that during those times that he doesn't quite remember what was going on, he was out killing people. So he has to come to terms with this other part of his life. One of the cute little clever things that I've already picked up on about this show is that the two characters are named Henry and Edward. For those of you who didn't catch it, the names Henry and Edward are obvious tributes to Henry Jekyll and Edward Hyde. But it's Christian Slater. I mean, come on. Christian Slater playing a psychopath. I'm having Heather's flashbacks right now.
I'm just having flashbacks of Christian Slater's life. But I agree. I've liked pretty much everything I've seen with Christian Slater since Heather's, and undoubtedly I'll give the show a try.
I will go so far as to say that Christian Slater is one of those actors that when I learn that he's in a film, I give it consideration to going and actually seeing it. Like I said, I'm going to check out Fringe because of the arm twisting that you did. Another new show that's coming out is called The 11th Hour, which is kind of a CSI meets Fringe meets Smash Lab, where people go on out and they investigate people who are abusing science. And as much as that premise sounds like something that would be right up my alley, I just have one of those feelings that it's going to bomb tremendously. Of course, I also had that feeling about Chuck last year, and we see where that got us.
We have to revise that number from earlier. 80% of television shows that get on are canceled. 90% of the remaining suck but get to stay on the air. And Chuck is one of those.
How Bionic Woman got canceled and Chuck stayed on the air is beyond me.
My honest guess is there were more women out there interested in catching the actor from Chuck every single week than there were men interested in Michelle Ryan. And honestly, there's some stuff that I don't know why it's back. I'm a big Smallville fan from way back. It's one of my favorite shows, actually, of all time. One of my favorite renditions of the Superman legend. And I gotta say, I think they may have jumped the shark 2 seasons ago, and they're still going. I'm guessing, honestly, this is the end, because I think Tom Welling's contract is up this year. And whether or not he wants to come back and play Clark Kent is anybody's guess. But honestly, how many years can he play the Clark Kent before Superman comes out?
I mean, he's going to be working at the Daily Planet this year.
Exactly, and pretty much that coincides with him becoming Superman and all the rest of the Superman legends. And I understand that Smallville is a retelling.
It stepped outside of the Superman continuity.
In the first episode, come on, let's be honest.
But we'll get to returning stuff in a sec. Some other shows of interest, not to me, mind you, but probably to other people. Valentine is a new family drama that focuses in on Greek gods that have come to Earth and are playing matchmakers.
I gotta ask you a question about this. I remember they were working on recasting and reworking an old canceled show called Cupid. So I was really wondering if Valentine was just Cupid redo.
No, they're still planning on redoing Cupid, too. A show that got canceled back in the 90s, before it even hit the 13-episode mark, and they're retooling it to try to bring it back again.
Well, anything that sounds so close to stupid must be good for a network.
Oh, and Valentine is also on the CW. I think that pretty much says everything.
To me, that says it has a long shelf life because the CW doesn't have anything better. I don't know who thought it would be a good idea to take UPN and the WB and merge them, take all of the worst shows and keep them, and throw away the good ones.
Well, they did keep Smallville, and Smallville was still fairly strong at the time, although they had the new Aquaman show ready and waiting in the wings, and they decided, no, we're not going to pick this show up, but let's bring back Beauty and the Geek and America's Top Model. Yeah, those are winner shows. So much so that they're teaming up Ashton Kutcher and Tyra Banks to produce yet another reality series for a mid-season replacement.
Just what we need.
Fortunately, reality shows don't fall within our genre, so we can cap on them all we like. Also on the list for the upcoming season is The Mentalist, which is being produced by the same people who created The Ghost Whisperer. It's about a guy who used to have psychic abilities who is working as an advisor for the FBI, and he's using little tricks and gimmicks to bluff his way through the situation. To me, this sounds very familiar to a show that's already on television on the USA Network, only their version is much better. It's called Psych, where he plays a detective who pretends to be psychic. And it's very funny, very enjoyable.
It's one of my favorite shows that's out there. It's really funny. Technically, it's not genre because he's not psychic, but that is the joke.
Again, that's another one of those that you twisted my arm into watching. Now that I've seen it, I love it. But then again, I love Monk, too. And
I told you, if you like Monk, you're going to like Psych. They're not the same show, but they have the same irreverent comedy.
As long as we're hyping USA shows, Monk, Psych, Burn Notice, and In Plain Sight is a quadruple threat for USA.
I can't agree with you more on that. I love Mary McCormick. The only thing that really ever surprises me on that show is every time somebody tells her, you're hot, she goes, you think I'm hot? Duh!
And speaking of shows that aren't within the genre, but that we're mentioning here, is what I would consider to be the biggest stretch of trying to fit something within the genre, The X-List. this has chick flick written all over it, and the only thing that even remotely ties it into science fiction and fantasy is that the lead character is hunting down her ex-boyfriend's trying to find the one true love because a psychic has told her that she's already met him and that she has a year to find him.
Didn't sound good when Chris O'Donnell was in it. Doesn't sound good now.
I'm kind of rooting for that to be the first one on the chopping block. Cable does have a couple of decent things coming out this fall. You mentioned Legend of the Seeker, and also Sci-Fi Channel is bringing their internet show Sanctuary to television. It stars Amanda Tapping from Stargate, and I won't hold that against her.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, Stargate's pretty stupid, but can't blame her for that. I mean, I love Farscape, but Ben Browder and Claudia Black are both on Stargate SG-1.
And didn't encourage you whatsoever to tune in on the show.
It actually made me watch my second episode of Stargate. I wanted to see it when it came out. I went, oh my God, this is bad. Then they brought on two of my favorite actors, and I said, you know what? It's been almost 10 years. I'll give it another try. And I went, oh my God, this is still bad.
I actually did tune in and watch the 200th episode. And the fact that we're saying that Stargate hit 200 episodes kind of goes back to that 90% that you were talking about earlier. The 200th episode had a producer who was trying to adapt SG-1 into a television show, and it was very surreal and very weird. And I actually did enjoy it, but I realized that that wasn't their normal storytelling, so that was the only episode that I watched. Going back to Sanctuary, I did catch the first 4 webisodes, which, from what I've seen of the advertisements, it looks like they're going back and retelling those first couple of episodes. So you don't have to feel as though you have to see the webisodes to know what's going on the show. They're going to rehash that for you. But considering the fact that they made these webisodes on a shoestring budget, and now they have a budget, I'm assuming that they're going to do some great things with it.
This really may be the future of new media. It may be to show pilot episodes and to prove there's an audience for your television show. I mean, Richard Hatch has been trying to sell his Battlestar Galactica pilot and his Legend of Orion pilot for years now, but he's never put them on the internet. I know some of that has to do with licensing and stuff like that, but if he were to produce stuff specifically to put on the internet and prove there was an audience for it, he'd probably get a lot better response.
If he could go to the producers and say, look, in this 1 week alone, I got 500,000 hits when I released a new webisode, that's going to get their attention. Unfortunately, at this stage in the game, this type of thing is only going to work for people who have a reputation, like Amanda Tapping or a Richard Hatch.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that because it's still new media, that they're using the big names to draw that initial audience. Joss Whedon just did the Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. There's not a place for this. It's not a television show. It's not a movie. It's something brand new that nobody's tried before, and the internet's the perfect place for that.
I think that this will be a trend of the future. But also, if you look back 8 or 9 years ago, Trey Parker and Matt Stone got started with South Park on the internet, and it drew the attention of the CEO of Comedy Central, and they said, here, have a show, and it's been on for almost a decade now. So it's not something new, but it really didn't take off at that point either. I think you're going to start seeing more and more of it. And then, of course, they have the mid-season replacements in the shoot as well. We mentioned Dollhouse earlier, and NBC also has 2 genre shows waiting in the wings. The first is Merlin. That one's pretty self-explanatory.
Except for the fact that it's like Smallville. It's Merlin and Arthur when they were young.
Before they became legends. And it puts them more as peers rather than mentor and protege. Kings is a retelling of the story of King David from the Bible, only it's going to be set in modern day. The reason I would classify this one as a genre show is because it's set in modern day, but not in modern society. That one's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around, and it hurts. Personally, I'm really kind of torn on that one as to whether or not I would want to watch it, and whether or not I would like to see it succeed.
I guess what I'd have to say is it actually sounds interesting to me enough that I would watch the first episode. And honestly, I would judge it based on that episode.
Again, I think this is one of those shows that it's either going to be really good or it's going to be really bad. I don't see a middle ground available. So we started out talking about the 2 shows that we wanted to see succeed. Which 2 shows do you think won't make it past the starting blocks?
Man, that's tough.
Tough to narrow it down to just two?
Honestly, yes. Really looking at it, my guess would be Valentine and X-List. However, the X-List could fall into one of those, put it on after Chuck and keep the same audience.
Actually, I think that it has a better chance of being put on after The Ghost Whisperer and keep the same audience. We mentioned earlier, as much as I think that Valentine should fail, the fact that it's on the CW means that it'll at least get a full season.
Yeah, it really is hard to put anything on the CW that is bad enough to cancel. I don't know how to diss it bad enough. It just seems like pretty much everything that's on the CW, and at this point I'd actually include Smallville in there, and I'm still a Smallville fan, but pretty much everything on the CW is probably what I would call cancelable on any other network.
This is the network that brings you Gossip Girls and One Tree Hill. If that stuff hasn't been canceled yet, I think you could put a 60-minute special of watching Dog Do Dry, and it wouldn't get canceled. I remember back when CBS had their late-night block that they put on after...
Oh, Silk Stockings! Love it!
Shows that were too mature for the typical 7 to 10 time slots. They had Silk Stockings, they had Forever Night.
What was that judge show called?
Blind Justice.
Wow, yeah!
And these were actually decent shows, and they were enjoyable.
I think, though, for me and you, although they were supposed to be the mature audience television shows, they were also kind of B-movie quality to them. And you really have to take people who can appreciate B-movies to really like these shows.
And honestly, while The Block was only on for two seasons, Silk Stockings got picked up by USA and continued on for at least another three seasons. Forever Night was picked up by Sci-Fi Channel and had at least another two seasons. So I would actually call them the precursors to the original cable programming that we have now, like Psych, Monk, Sanctuary, Battlestar Galactica. But getting back to my original point, Gossip Girls is something that should be programmed at 11:30 at night rather than 7 or 8 o'clock where impressionable teens can actually watch it, even though that's the target audience. Like you said before, the list of potential failures is incredibly high. I hope that The Mentalist bombs incredibly badly, just so that people who might get interested in that could go and watch Psych. I think 11th Hour will probably make it through just because it's produced by Jerry Bruckheimer and because it has such a CSI feel to it. But then again, everything that Jerry Bruckheimer does for TV has a CSI feel to it. And again, I hope that The X-List bombs so horrendously badly that this time next year we'll be going, yeah, The X-List, it had all of three episodes, didn't it?
Every once in a while, though, I gotta admit, I pick one of these shows that I think is gonna bomb, that really doesn't deserve a chance, that turns out to be pretty good. I remember reading the Buffy the Vampire Slayer ad and TV guide, and thinking to myself, this was a really incredibly mediocre movie that starred Luke Perry, that they're going to make into a TV show about a teenage girl who hunts vampires. I figured I would want to watch the first episode to say, yeah, I saw that show, and then it was canceled immediately. And now I'm just a huge Josh Whedon fan.
So we've talked about new genre shows. Let's spend a couple minutes talking about the returning stuff. Heroes is a given. I am so anxiously anticipating Volume 3 of Heroes.
Oh, the short season really sucked. That was so tough to take that one like a man. I'm really looking forward to the return of Eli Stone. It's offbeat, little irreverent, very funny, very well-written, just a brilliant cast. It's just a show that really clicked last year.
I actually have two shows that I'm looking forward to seeing the second season of.
Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, yes, I know.
Yes, I am looking forward to Terminator. I did enjoy that a lot more than you did. But I'm also looking forward to Reaper. Reaper was one of those that I picked last year as being one that I thought would be successful, and it did get picked up for a second season, and again, it's a little irreverent, it's funny, and it has a weird click to it. I really grew to enjoy it.
I've heard really good things with that. I don't actually have a problem with Reaper coming back as I do with Terminator. I think, though, you would enjoy Pushing Daisies, which was created by Barry Sonnenfeld. Again, it's one of those offbeat, irreverent, really incredibly funny shows. I'm not sure what I expected from that, but it keeps me coming back every single week.
I do want to pay very brief tribute to those that are no longer with us. We mentioned that Bionic Woman was canceled, Journeyman was canceled, Moonlight was canceled, which was another one of those that I watched and I enjoyed, and I was sorry to see that it didn't get renewed for a second season. Jericho got canceled again, and New Amsterdam, which, again, I watched, I enjoyed, but I wasn't surprised that it didn't get picked up.
With the sole exception of Jericho on there, I truly believe that Bionic Woman, Journeyman, Moonlight, and New Amsterdam were all canceled because of the writer's strike. I think that they all pretty much ended their regular run when they ran out of episodes, for the most part. At that point, if they didn't have the ratings, the network was like, it's easier to cut and run than it is to try them again.
Actually, New Amsterdam got an even rawer deal than that, because it was on the fall schedule, it got pushed back to a mid-season replacement, and essentially it was one of those weird shows that was canceled before it ever hit the air. They had 13 episodes in the can. The network said, that's all we want, we don't want any more than that, pack things up, go home, and they aired them when they had an opening.
I think probably the worst of the offenses, though, is Jericho. In my mind, and probably my mind alone, there was an 8-episode return of Jericho just to get the fans to shut up. And I know that, you know, realistically in a business sense, that's not true.
No, I think that's very true. I think that they saw that there was an audience there, that they could sell advertising to that audience, and like you said, they put it on to get them to shut up and stop mailing them peanuts, but they never had any intention whatsoever to let it go beyond those 8 episodes.
That I believe. I really believe they just got the 8 episodes. They were looking for something they knew they could guarantee an audience for. They're like, okay, we'll get these 8 episodes. We don't have to put up capital to come up with a new pilot episode. We don't have to do anything. And we've got a little emergency hedge right there for those 8 episodes.
Back when we did our fan cast a year ago, I said it and I'll say it again. Networks don't like to be proven wrong.
But truly, I wish we could add the Sarah Connor Chronicles to that list. I know that you enjoyed it, and for some reason, there were a lot of other people that enjoyed it. They must be the same ones that watched Stargate SG-1.
I resent that remark.
You're supposed to. It's just not well thought out. It's not well acted. I cannot stand Lena Headley. She's in the bottom 10% of actresses I've ever seen. I love Summer Glau. She's the reason that I came back and watched every episode. The rest of the cast, I would think, is pretty well in between those two levels.
In this particular case, I will lay claim to having the numbers on my side. I do think that one of the advantages that Sarah Connor Chronicles had going for it was, A, it didn't have any competition. It was up against repeats across the board. The other advantage that it had going for it was that it was part of an already established franchise. I will say that one of my big concerns this year for Terminator is the fact that it's going head-to-head with Chuck. So we'll see how strong that show can stand up to the competition.
I would think it's a totally different audience.
I would agree, but the few audience members that it might have in common, it'll be interesting to see which side of the fence they fall on. So I think it's safe to say that Terminator is the show that you hope doesn't get renewed for a third season?
Honestly, I'd like to see the direction revised this year. Despite the fact that it's called the Sarah Connor's Chronicles, I'd like to see her featured as a minor character and see John Connor step up as the main character and see his transformation from a school kid into a warrior.
Of all of the returning genre shows, my gut reaction is I still want Chuck to fail, but that's just because I hate being wrong. To round things out, non-genre show looking most forward to returning?
I can't remember which non-genre shows I'm watching. The only one I can think of is Bones.
Yeah. Bones, Simpsons, Family Guy, those are the top three that I can think of.
Bones, yeah. I only started watching that because it had David Boreanaz in it.
To finish things off, let's award our Why Hasn't That Been Canceled Yet award again this year.
Yeah, I'm going to go 30 Rock again.
Yeah, I agree. Why that show hasn't been canceled yet, I just don't know. Come on, NBC. Please, can you finally realize that Alec Baldwin just can't act?
There's actually 3 times that I've enjoyed Alec Baldwin. I may be, like, the only person out there, but I liked The Hunt for Red October. I thought that was a really good movie.
That is the movie that he based his entire career on. That is the one that made him a name, and it's because he was in a movie with Sean Connery.
And arguably, you could say that's not one of Sean Connery's better movies, because he did that Russian accent. I can't do it. I can't do a Russian accent that sounds Scottish, but he can.
He was from the Scottish district of Russia.
Yeah. So that would be the first movie that I like Alec Baldwin in. The second one is what I would consider a bad movie, but when you start out like that was a bad movie, I don't think that Alec Baldwin was bad in it. The Shadow.
Oh, see, right there, I'm going to argue with you, because, yes, it was bad writing, but it was horrendous acting.
See, I think you're expecting too much, because you have to start out with the level of, it's a bad movie, and you can either be at that level, which I think he was, or you could be below that level.
It's the first time I've ever seen a quote-unquote superhero movie where I was hoping that the hero would die in the end.
And the third place that I really like Alec Baldwin is pretty much any of his appearances on The Simpsons.
Actually, I take it back. One of the best acting jobs that I ever saw him do was in the interviews dealing with his divorce from Kim Basinger. I think that was some wonderful acting. So, that is our breakdown of the upcoming television season. We want to thank you for joining us and hope that you enjoyed yourself as much as we did.
We thank you for listening today. We encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. Ew.